You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Happy Friday, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us today. It is exciting to be here and sharing Friday afternoon with you, especially as we face a hopefully wonderful three-day weekend, the Labor Day weekend for everybody. And I will tell you that today we're going to be joined by a guest. We're expecting a gentleman by the name of Joe Gizzardi to join us at about 20 minutes after the hour. Joe is a senior writing fellow with an organization that I'm proud to be a part of, and that's CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. You know, California right now is bankrupt. They are having huge problems. Many of them are directly or indirectly attributable to amnesty policies, to sanctuary city policies, to policies that not only exist in California, but that have been created by our own federal government. And that's not to vilify immigrants. My mother, may she rest in peace, was an immigrant. My dad's parents were immigrants. My first wife's parents had survived the Holocaust and lawfully immigrated to the United States, and were happy to become a part of this incredible tapestry that are the citizens of our country. But we need to make clear distinctions now more than ever about what the immigration laws are about and what it is to be an immigrant as compared with what it is to be an illegal alien. And I like to sum it up by saying that the difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. You know, we all love to have company stop by and visit. I enjoy when my neighbors knock on the door, or my former colleagues from the old INS come by, and we sit down and we have a cup of coffee, or we chat, or we go to their homes and so forth. That's what we do. Company is a wonderful thing, but I don't think anybody likes the idea of people coming into their homes at 3 o'clock in the morning by crawling through their bedroom windows. And that's what illegal immigration is about. While it's true that many of the folks who come here illegally aren't coming to carry out attacks on our nation, they're not coming to sell narcotics, they're not coming to commit felonies, quite a few do. And in fact, right now, there are hundreds of thousands of fugitive aliens who have serious criminal histories. And right now, I assure you, unfortunately, there are those in our country who support terrorism, and they are in our country. And God forbid there may well be terrorists planning their next attack in our country. And it is really important that we, as citizens of this great democratic republic, make it clear that we will not tolerate illegal immigration. We will not tolerate government policies that undermine the citizens of our nation. We have been getting hammered for far too long by the politicians of both sides of the aisle who are only concerned about getting campaign contributions or getting the votes that the special interest groups promise them that they can turn out for them at the next election, because politicians, just like anyone else on any other job, first and foremost want to keep their jobs. They want to get promoted. And for them, the key to keeping their jobs are the campaign contributions and the votes, and that's what they are all about. And that is why all too often the goals and objectives of our elected representatives do not parallel the concerns of the constituents that they are supposed to represent. And just a year ago, the Supreme Court came up with what I believe was a god-awful ruling saying that corporations could make unlimited campaign contributions to pay for advertising and that sort of thing for people running for office. And I assure you, ladies and gentlemen, that the needs, the desires, and the goals of most corporations have absolutely nothing to do what is in the best interest not only of our citizens but even of our country. Because the day of the American corporation has gone the way of the dodo bird, unless you're talking about small companies. Microsoft, IBM, you name the company. These corporations are multinational companies, and the only pledge of allegiance that they say is the pledge of allegiance to the bottom line. One of the great things about being on a radio show as Tom Garcia has afforded me this tremendous opportunity. You know, again, my name is Mike Cutler. I'm not Tom Garcia. Tom is a friend, and he's a great American. He's a former naval aviator, a Top Gun instructor. He's now a pilot with American Airlines. And he has provided me with this incredible opportunity to guest host his show during this past summer, which, of course, is now drawing to a close. And we anticipate that I will be beginning my own program on the USA Talk Radio network that Tom started in just a matter of a few weeks. I will probably be coming on a little bit later. I want to give people an opportunity to get home, maybe grab a bite and sit back and then relax. And maybe it's not all that relaxing to hear what's going on in the world, but you know, ignorance is not bliss. And if we as Americans don't get our voices heard, because for far too long most of us have not, then we wind up with the situation that we are now confronting today. So what Tom has done to provide me this magnificent opportunity is something I'm greatly appreciative of, and I hope you share my appreciation of his efforts. You know, the First Amendment is not simply about freedom of speech, freedom of religion, and freedom of the press. Everybody rattles those three off. It's kind of the mantra that we all recite when people talk about First Amendment. There's two other components to the First Amendment that seldom gets noted. Number one, the right to peaceably assemble. Number two, the right to seek redress of grievances. Now, let me tell you why those are so important. At the time of the founding of this great nation, the only way that our citizens could have discourse, discussion, debate was live and in person. There was no technology to make it happen. You just couldn't do it. If you couldn't see the person you wanted to talk to, then you couldn't speak with that person. There was no telephone, no radio, no internet, you know, nothing, no social medium. So back then, discussion had to be done person to person, face to face, eyeball to eyeball. And what the Founding Fathers said was that as Americans, we have the right to peaceably assemble so we could have those discussions and arguments and debate. Of course, the key word is peaceably, to be civil, to be respectful of each other. And sometimes it's difficult to be respectful of our opponents because all too often the folks on the side of amnesty and open borders really want to roll around in the mud, but I always insist on taking the high road. I am tired of the accusations that if you want secure borders, then you're a bigot or a racist. And most people are afraid to confront these allegations. They don't want people to think ill of them. But, you know, as Americans, we have a tradition of speaking our mind. Go back to that First Amendment. Go back to the idea of redress of grievances. I have many grievances with our government, and I'm sure you do too. And by the way, I'm not even a political conservative. I'm registered as a Democrat, as I have been ever since I cast my first ballot over 40 years ago. But I do think the Democratic Party, and quite frankly the Republican Party, need to get batteries for their GPS because they are lost in space, folks. But the point is that the other side of this immigration debate resort to false accusations. They resort to use of artful use of language. The term alien, for example. I do a lot of speaking engagements. I just got back from Washington. I'm heading to Ohio in a couple of weeks where I'll be speaking before some government folks. And I very often speak on the issue of the nexus between immigration and national security, as well as the other many issues that it impacts, but especially national security. Those of you familiar with me know that I was an INS agent for 30 years. I've arrested terrorists as well as drug dealers in my career, as well as so-called, you know, average illegal aliens, people who are here in violation of the law to work and send money home and so forth. I've done a bunch of congressional hearings. I've worked with other state legislators to try to get immigration laws enacted in the states around our country. Because we have to accept the idea that immigration is one of the most serious challenges that our country confronts, and it's not a single issue. It's the major factor in every threat and challenge that we're dealing with. You can't have a successful war on terror when you have open borders, when the only place that the border truly exists is on the map. You can't wage a successful war against the narco traffickers whose goal is to bring their thugs into our country to peddle their garbage to our children and other members of our neighborhoods and communities around the country, and they do. Napolitano is the head of an agency that I have come to refer to as the Department of Homeland Surrender. She tells us how safe and secure the borders are, and then will go on and tell us how 230 cities, by her reckoning, many more by my reckoning, are now infested by members of the Mexican drug cartels. Well, guess what, folks? If our borders were so darn secure, how do those drug traffickers get into our country, and how do they regularly receive their shipments of the narcotics that they peddle on street corners throughout this nation if our borders were so secure? Clearly, there is a disconnect between reality and the stuff that comes out of the mouths of the people who are paid to protect us and our families and our nation. Our borders are as secure as a sieve is watertight. There is no security to be found along our borders, and our borders don't just simply exist along the Rio Grande. It was remarkable, I think I mentioned it on last week's program, that John Huntsman, the former governor of Utah who participated in the presidential debate in Iowa, said that he would talk to the four governors of the border states, and then we could deal with the people who are here. Well, someone needs to give Mr. Huntsman a map of the United States and remind him, yes, we do have a Canadian border, and they need to remind him that each year, somewhere on the order of 20 or 25 million non-immigrant aliens enter the United States through ports of entry, specifically international airports. So I don't care what you do with California and New Mexico, Texas and Arizona, because right now, every year, we have millions of aliens entering the United States through airports located throughout the country. And that's why I've made the point that any state that has a seaport or an international airport is also a border state. And this nonsense, this fantasy that America cannot be competitive if we don't bring foreign students in to study in our universities, that we can't be competitive if we don't hire chemists and engineers and scientists and other high-tech workers, computer programmers from India and other countries, that the success of the mythical American corporation hangs in the balance, is a bald-faced lie. And any politician who tells you that if we don't bring in the best and brightest from around the world, that America will fail, that politician is putting a knife in our back. Because what they are really saying is, we don't care if Americans get the jobs. We want to help foreign workers get those jobs who, by the way, as a goal, want to send as much money as they earn out of our country back to their families and their home countries. And every year it's estimated that more than $100 billion gets wired from the United States to their home countries that sent them here. So this is the kind of lunacy that really is not acceptable, really has to stop. That's just the bottom line. So what I'm going to do now is, I believe that Joe Gizzardi is standing by. Let me see if this is Joe. Stand by, folks. Joe Gizzardi, is that you?
Yes, here I am.
Here you are. All right, hold on 1 second, Joe. We have another caller. I'm delighted to have you join me today. Stand by one moment. Let me just see who else is on the line with us.
Sure.
You're speaking with Mike Cutler. Who's this?
Tom Garcia. Michael, how are you today?
Tom Garcia, my goodness gracious, you're the guy whose program I hijacked. I'm wonderful. How are you?
good. It's glad to hear you. I'm sorry I called in at the same time as your guest did. I just wanted to throw a couple things out there. I used to live in California, and I see what they're doing with their own Dream Act. And you hit the nail on the head. They're just inviting more illegal immigration. They're just basically opening their arms up saying, come on in. While my daughter, who's in college, is having a difficult time finding financial aid, we're telling all these folks, we prefer you over our own citizens.
Could they be any more disloyal to us?
No, not at all. They really couldn't.
And by the way, folks, I have to make the point. Both Tom and I are members of America's minorities. I'm Jewish, and with the name Garcia, I know that you are of Hispanic ancestry. And,
correct.
You know, what I find infuriating also is the myth of the Latino vote, as though every Latino, just like the Jewish vote, every Jew is going to vote the same way. Don't you see that as a form of bigotry, Tom?
Oh, absolutely, yeah, and that's what they're counting on, but it doesn't really work that way. I have too many friends that are of Hispanic heritage that don't believe in any of this and are outraged by this, so it's we need people with those last names that end in a vowel from Latin America and Mexico, et cetera, to speak up and say, no, this is, I'm an American. That's what I am. I'm an American, and I want to protect my country, and I really am not interested in helping out people from all over the world at the expense of our own people.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I kind of compare it to the situation that developed when the Titanic went down, and people in the lifeboats had to have heard people thrashing about in the frigid shark-infested waters, but knew if they brought everybody into their boats, then their boats would capsize. America is like one of those lifeboats. We are oversubscribed right now. We are going bankrupt. We've grounded the space shuttle. And by the way, I think you've probably been following the news as an aviator. Now the Russian Progress supply ship crashed, so they may have to depopulate the space station because, you know, where is our leadership to have alternatives in place for what's basically an American project? I mean, really, I know some of your neighbors and friends are members of the Astronaut Corps. Really, I think that there would have been no space station without America doing it. And here we are in an unbelievable situation. There's such a lack of leadership, and there's such a lack of support for America and American objectives at this point in time. It's remarkable, isn't it?
It is. It's like our leadership just hates Americans. And, well, listen, I want to let you get on to your guest, Michael, but I did want to throw out one little plug here, and that is the Tea Party convention for the state of Florida. It's the first ever. And whether you're a Tea Party person or not, there's going to be a presidential debate there, and they're going to have a senatorial debate. So that's particularly important for Floridians. But I am going to be there with the American Hour Radio Show broadcasting November 4th, 5th, and 6th. Not only live, doing interviews, so that's really kind of why I want to plug it. It is a good thing to go to if you're interested in political activism in any way, whether you're a Tea Party member or not. But I want to let people know where they can find out more about it. And it's if they go to the website, TTPNC, and I'll do the phonetic, Tango Tango Papa November Charlie.com. And that's the first ever. Going to be November 4th, 5th, and 6th. So I wanted to plug that because we're going to be there broadcasting, and we might even rope you into a little bit of helping out with that, Michael.
Will you fly me down? I'd be honored to join you down there.
Well, I don't know if we might do that. We might be able to do that, but we may just have you join us live during the broadcast
at
some point.
I would love to. It would be a privilege. And you know, I am one of the advisors to the Tea Party Immigration Coalition.
That is correct.
So,
yeah.
And so we're trying our best, folks, and let's forget about political parties, really and truly. You know, I think many of the founding fathers had conniptions over the idea of political parties because then too many people become beholden to the party and not to their constituents. I think we need to be united as Americans no matter where we stand politically.
Yes, absolutely. Well, listen, I'll let you get back to your show. It's great talking to you, Michael. Keep up the great work, and we'll be
Thank
in touch
you.
Soon.
Where are you calling in from, by the way? I never know where Tom is. You know, he's a traveling man.
Nowhere exotic, although I did broadcast a couple days ago live from Sao Paulo, Brazil,
and I will be
in Madrid tomorrow, but I am at home today, actually.
Well, travel safely tomorrow, and thanks so much for calling in, and we have to talk about getting my own show up and running within the next few weeks. I'm so much looking forward to it, and it really is a privilege to be filling in for you, Tom.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. It's a privilege to have you. You guys take care. Have a great rest of the day and weekend.
Excellent, Tom. Thanks again for calling in. It's good to hear your voice.
Bye now.
Joe Gazzardi. See that? We had to do a little juggling act, and I thank you for joining us today.
It's a pleasure, as always.
How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thanks very much, Mike. It's, you know, we've been in some turbulent times here in the last couple of weeks in the immigration movement, but that's the nature of our game.
It really is. Did you see the link that I sent you about the IRS?
Yes, I did see it in my email. That's about the aliens and tax credits.
Yep. Is that remarkable or is that remarkable?
Well, it's just, you know, as we're saying here, it's just a continuous series of one remarkable and really mind-boggling event after another. I think that, you know, the issue of tax credits, I believe, and these I-10 numbers were instrumental in allowing so many illegal immigrants to get home mortgages. Didn't they play a big role in that fiasco?
Well, they did. And you know what was so remarkable? Alan Greenspan, I mean, this is what blows my mind. And by the way, while I'm looking this up, Why don't you fill our listeners in as to who Joe Gazzardi is and why he's on the program today? Why don't you give us a little bit about your background, Joe, before we get ahead of ourselves. How's that?
Okay. Well, I'm a native Californian and ran for governor in the recall election in 2003. I was at the time employed as a California public school teacher, and as such was pretty much on the front line of the immigration battles. You know, I was able to see close up what over-immigration has done to California. In the state, there's approximately 1.5 million non-English speakers enrolled in California's K-12 school district. So I've been an activist and fighting alongside Mike here for many years to bring some common sense to the whole immigration issue. It's
and your voice
uphill
is
all the way.
And your voice is so greatly appreciated because it is a voice of experience. You know, all too often, and, you know, I've done many TV appearances, I'm sure you've done the same, and you wind up going up against the talking head who maybe wrote a book or did a research paper 8 months ago and now profess to be expert in the subject. It's hard for me to believe this. It's kind of daunting. But next month, October, will mark 40 years since I was sworn in as an immigration officer. Can you imagine that? 40 years
ago.
Well,
I'll tell you what, in 40 years, you have absolutely seen it all. I mean, there's no question.
Well, no, I'll tell you
that.
What, there's an expression that I have in law enforcement, you've never seen it all.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I mean, who would think that we would be seeing with Obama what we have seen in the last 2 weeks and Jerry Brown?
It's a continuing cavalcade. I mean, even with George W., we had a war going on. We sent Border Patrol agents to secure the Iraqi border, and our Border Patrol agents, Ramos Compian, and there were a couple of others, by the way, that did not get the press coverage, were arrested for doing their jobs. We've left our own borders open, but we understood that we had to protect the Iraqi border. How insane is that? How angry does it make you? I know it infuriates me. It gets my blood pressure up. It's remarkable.
I had forgotten about Ramos. I mean, not forgotten permanently, but they've just been kind of out of my mind. What is their current status? Are they still in jail? Or
no, they're out. Their sentences were commuted, but they are still convicted felons.
Right,
there is another agent, and unfortunately, his name slips my mind, but he had arrested an illegal alien with hundreds of pounds of marijuana, which means hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of drugs. When he was asked by the Border Patrol agent to get into the vehicle, and he asked him a couple of questions about where the other people were, because they never move a load that big by themselves, he refused to cooperate. And when he didn't want to get into the car, my understanding, the agent pulled on his handcuffs. Well, that's what we're trained to do. That's called a come-along. You know, he didn't beat him up. He didn't hit him over the head with a billy club. He simply yanked his handcuffs in an upward direction to get the guy to submit to him so he could get him into the vehicle. Again, what I understand to have been the case. If someone knows better, I'd love to hear from them.
Uh-huh.
Believe it or not, he was accused of violating the civil rights of that individual who was in custody and was to be tried for a 10-year felony for violating civil rights of a prisoner that was in his custody.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy.
Now, when you stop and realize what we're doing, and by the way, while we've been talking, while you've been speaking, Joe, I came up with this quote. This is from Alan Greenspan. I mean, this blows my mind. When he was the chairman of the Federal Reserve Board on April 8th, 2005, he gave this big, long-winded speech of his, and you know the way he speaks. Watching grass grow is more exciting. In fact, one day I was asked what I thought about him when he testified before the Immigration Subcommittee 2 years ago, April 30th of 2009. I said, watching him, I was struck by the fact that this was the first time I'd ever seen anybody provide testimony while suffering from rigor mortis. But anyway, this is what he said before the Federal Reserve Board 6 years ago. Alan Greenspan's words, I quote, "A brief look back at the evolution of the consumer finance market reveals that the financial services industry has long been competitive, innovative, and resilient, especially in the past decade. Technological advances have resulted in increased efficiency and scale within the financial services industry. Innovations has brought about a multitude of new products, get this one, folks, such as subprime loans and niche credit programs for immigrants. Such developments are representative of the market responses that have driven the financial services industry throughout the history of our country. Mm-hmm. That,
well,
lady,
you know, Mike, I was, I'm.
That is what unraveled our economy.
I'm one of the hundreds of thousands of victims of that policy. I have a home in California that I cannot sell. And, you know, like millions of others, as I say, that policy of the subprime, the, you know, balloon payments and the mortgages and no money down and all of those policies.
But there's something even more insidious. But here's something that's even more insidious, and I'll tell you what it is. You see, Alan Greenspan, by the way, when he testified before the subcommittee in 2009, talked about the need to eliminate inequality in wages between Americans with skills and no skills. He referred to American workers with skills and education as the privileged elite, believe it or not. But what you need to compare this with is a statement that was made by a gentleman by the name of Stephen McGraw, when he testified before the House Immigration Subcommittee on June 26th of 2003. At the time, Stephen McGraw was the head of intelligence for the FBI, and he talked about the national security risk to accepting Mexican matricula cards because they are not verifiable identity documents, which means that one person could take on multiple names, all false, obviously. There would be no way of determining what the credit history of the person is if they use it, because if this is a fictitious name, then you don't know what the guy's track record is. You could have one guy, in theory, get 1,000 credit cards in 1,000 different names. And he said, you must not accept these documents. Well, guess what? The Treasury Department and the Fed disregarded the advice that was given by the head of intelligence of the FBI when he testified before Congress. I have to tell you, I don't think there has ever been a time, or if there is, I'd be hard-pressed to find it, when the head of the FBI intelligence talks about a threat to national security that gets utterly ignored by other divisions within our government.
Mm. Yeah, well, it's all, as you know, as we said at the outset, it's just one series of shocking occurrences right on top of the other that, you know, Obama has really kind of brought, I think, to a peak with this backdoor amnesty scheme of his. What do you think is going to happen in these oversight hearings, Mike?
I really don't know. I really don't know. You know, Lamar Smith is an old friend. I've had the privilege of testifying for him numerous times. I've now done, I think we're up to 15 congressional hearings. I just did a hearing at Lamar Smith's behest before the Immigration Subcommittee this past January about worksite enforcement. And I know Lamar has a bill, the HALT Act, to try to prevent this administration from enacting de facto amnesty by policy. But, you know, Lamar and I right now do have a point of disagreement. He proposed a bill, H.R. 2164, which would make the use of E-Verify mandatory. And I'm a huge proponent of E-Verify. I think it's essential. Because I can also tell you that while it's unusual for me, I did actually assist a criminal defense attorney in defending two gentlemen who were accused of intentionally hiring illegal aliens in Hawaii, and I believe they had no idea they hired these people who were illegal. They were paying these people on the books. They had filled out the I-9s, which, if you're not familiar with it, folks, are the forms you fill out when you're hired by an employer. They were being paid prevailing wages, and when their housing was broken into, the managers called the police. If you think you're harboring illegal aliens, you're not going to call the police. And the way that the law is now written, Lamar Smith's bill wouldn't change it, is that aliens can determine what documents they can show the employer. And the other problem that is that the Smith bill would also preempt the states from enforcing immigration laws. When I was an immigration agent, I always felt that the enforcement of the immigration laws should be the sole domain of the federal government. We were out there doing the job, maybe not as well as I would like to have done it. But I said, you know, we've got it covered. We'll take care of it. Well, we don't have it covered any longer. Since they created DHS, they de-emphasized immigration to a point that's unbelievable. 90% of the bosses who run the department, who run ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, and CBP, Customs and Border Protection, did not come from immigration but came from legacy customs. And there's a big difference. Customs used to be under the Treasury Department because they're concerned with the movement of goods and currencies across international borders, as compared with immigration, which is concerned with people. Customs was more similar in what it did to what they do over at the IRS and at the Department of Commerce, because, again, the focus was on the movement of things and money. Immigration was more similarly related to the FBI and the Labor Department because of the concern about the impact of foreign workers on the labor market. In fact, prior to the Second World War, I don't know if you know this, Joe, but immigration was the bailiwick of the Labor Department, because our leaders back then, during what was wistfully remembered as the greatest generation, understood that a massive influx of foreign workers would have a harmful effect on American workers. So, you know, now I welcome anybody's help in enforcing the immigration law. So I with great respect and with great regret, I disagree with Mr. Smith's proposal. Mr. Smith, you know, is chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, very important job, and I can't think of a better man to hold that post. But I am troubled by the idea that the states would lose the ability to enforce the laws, and we've been getting some good Supreme Court decisions so far. In fact, I worked with Arizona to help them. I'm also concerned that the aliens can still show whatever documents they want. There is a law that goes back to 1940, the Alien Registration Act. The Alien Registration Act requires that any alien above the age of 18 must carry on his or her person proof of alien registration. It's a specific document. If you're a resident alien, for example, that means your green card. If you're here as a refugee, your refugee travel document, or there's another identity document that immigration will issue to you. And the law says if you're 18 or older, you must have that with you. So if that's the case, why are we still allowing an alien to go to an employer and say, you know what, I don't have my green card with me, I can tell you what my number is, but here's my driver's license and here's my Social Security card. It's an invitation to fraud. And what the Labor Department has been doing of late, believe it or not, is going out there and prosecuting and fining employers where the employer turns to a new employee and says, hey, Joe Gazzardi, you got the job, you're on the clock, I'm paying you right now, but do me a favor, Joe. Tomorrow morning when you come to work, could you please bring your green card with you? I just don't want to get in trouble for hiring an illegal alien. If I had just hired you and I made that request, I now violated your civil rights under the current law. Do you realize that?
No, I didn't realize that.
That's right. Because under the immigration laws as were written in 86 and would continue to be the case today with the new bill, if I ask for a specific document, once you've provided documents that are on this Chinese menu of documents that are supposed to be acceptable, and I ask for any additional documentation, I have now violated your civil rights, I can be prosecuted, I can be fined, and by the way, I have now left the door open for you, Mr. Employer, to be sued civilly by this alien who you just hired. So picture yourself in that situation. You hire some guy. Let's say I'm about to hire Joe Gazzardi because I want him to be my editor. And Joe says to me, Mike, I'm from Italy. And I say, well, with a name like Gazzardi, I believe that. And you say to me, but I've got a green card. Don't have it with me. All I have to do is say to Joe Gazzardi, you know what, Joe? You're showing me a driver's license from California. I'm here in New York. I've never seen a California license. It makes me uncomfortable. If you could be kind enough, just because I want to do the right thing by the law and by our fellow citizens and resident aliens, just please bring your green card in tomorrow. And you're on the clock. This has nothing to do with your employment. I've hired you. You're getting paid, but at your convenience. In fact, if that's not reasonable, I'll give you to the end of the week. I just want to make sure.
Mm-hmm.
I have now committed a crime. How crazy is that?
Well, it's complete. I am shocked even to think that such a thing is possible.
Well, and that was what I explained to the jury in Hawaii, that there's something known as document abuse. That is actually the chapter in the M-264 handbook. By the way, folks, while we're talking about this, if you want to go to my website, you probably know it if you're listening to me, but it's michaelcutler.net. I've written about this. You can also go to the CAPS website, capsweb.org, because they're trying to do the right thing, as Joe is and as I am. But this is the untenable situation that we have created for our employers, that we've created for our citizens. Simply asking for an additional bit of documentation, or maybe even spending too much time scrutinizing a document, because on the one hand, the law says that you as an employer are supposed to make a good faith effort. Well, what's a good faith effort? At what point does a good faith effort get you into trouble if you look at this document and you squint at it? I was on the witness stand in Honolulu. Great place to visit, by the way. So the U.S. attorneys blew up the alien cards of these employees. They were illegal aliens from Mexico. They had counterfeit green cards. And they blow up these documents so that they were the size of a three-story building. You could almost have moved in. And the letters were like about a foot tall, the tiny little letters. Because remember, a green card, if you haven't seen one, folks, is roughly the size of a state driver's license or a credit card. That's how big it is. And there's like two whole paragraphs or whatever on the back of the card, so you can imagine how tiny the letters are. And the U.S. attorney, with a pointer, a little laser pointer, is saying, look at the gap between these two words. And look, there was a period here, and it should have been a comma. And you're saying to yourself, wait a moment. A guy who is a farm manager making a good faith effort is now supposed to be a questioned document examiner? See, we are placing employers at risk for lawsuits and criminal prosecutions. You should know that in this particular case, the two managers of this farm were being charged with 15 or 16 count criminal indictments. They had never had a run-in with immigration before. When I used to do the educational visits to employers when they first had immigration reform back in 1986, I was one of the people assigned to go out into the community and interview the employers and explain to them what the law required and provide them with literature and educate them about their liabilities, responsibilities, and try to enlist them to be on our team and explain why it's so important to only hire people who are entitled to work here. And by the way, the U.S. attorney, and this had never happened to me as an agent or as an expert witness, because I have served as an expert witness in other federal trials since I retired from the INS, but this U.S. attorney wanted to make it personal. He was insulting me. I can't even tell you how nasty it got. It was ugly. And the short end of this, or the bottom line of this thing, is that the employer winds up in an untenable position because they violated what we were always taught would happen. The way we were instructed was that we would never prosecute someone criminally unless, for example, the employer was furnishing the false documents. Well, that makes sense. Or the employer was smuggling the aliens into the United States. Well, that makes sense. Generally, the only way we would go after someone criminally is if the guy, if it wasn't for those issues, had been fined previously, continued to hire illegal aliens, got a second fine of a greater amount, continued to hire illegal aliens, and then at that point the attitude is, well, nothing else is going to motivate this guy to do what's right. Now we're going to arrest him criminally. In this case, these two hapless farm managers got arrested because it was determined that 80% of their employees were illegal. Now, you should know something also, Joe, and those of you out there. This is what's so remarkable about this case. The managers recruited and hired all of these employees in California. And guess what? They had to somehow get them from California to Hawaii. So they put them on airplanes, and they flew them from California to Hawaii, and guess what documents they showed TSA? The very same counterfeit identity documents, the alien cards, that the managers of the farm were prosecuted for not recognizing as being counterfeit. But guess what? TSA didn't recognize them for being counterfeit either. They were of such quality. Tell me that isn't mind-boggling.
Well, I think you can get some pretty pretty professionally done fake documents these days, can't you, Mike?
Absolutely. Desktop publishing. And I looked at all the documents. I examined them. You know, if I really squinted at them, and remember, I had training and I was an immigration agent for years, and when I was assigned to the Unified Intelligence Division at DEA, we put together a document link analysis program to try to see if the drug dealers that we were dealing with, and the terrorists were going to common sources to get their documents to shut down the labs. So I had some pretty good training. But the average person looking at these documents could never have told that these were bad. And as I say, these were TSA. And by the way, do you know the title of the TSA employees who examined these documents? They're called document checkers. That's their job title. So the document checkers of the TSA could not determine that these were bad documents, but yet farm managers, whose primary responsibility to manage a farm, were now arrested and charged criminally because they couldn't figure out these were bad documents. How scary is that?
Do they get much in the way of training there, Mike, the document checkers? I mean, are they extensively trained?
I don't know, but you would like to believe they are. I mean, supposedly our lives hang in the balance, and not just the people on airplanes, but the people on the ground. Should those airplanes be used as cruise missiles as they were nearly 10 years ago? You know, just 1 week away from that horrific anniversary of 9/11. So, you know, if they're not trained to know what documents are supposed to look like, then what's the point to the whole exercise? I will tell you what's remarkable. You know, as a retired agent, I have my credentials that are stamped retired. And sometimes they will say to me, I haven't been trained to identify counterfeit from authentic retired credentials. Do you have a driver's license? And I'm happy to comply, and I show them my driver's license. So my understanding is they're supposed to be trained in identifying these documents, supposed to be. But my point is, if every one of these employees, and I think there were about 50 of them, could get through the TSA and not one of them was stopped, the only time one guy got stopped, which is what started the investigation, was one guy was taken to the airport by the employer because they used to give these guys a ticket every 6 months so they could go back to the mainland to take care of personal business. And one of their employees, apparently unknown to the employer, had multiple sets of ID. And the ticket did not match the name that was on the green card that he showed the person at the gate. And that was what started the investigation rolling. It was determined that the employer had no knowledge of that, by the way. But other than that, all of these other people easily got past TSA with counterfeit green cards.
Frightening.
So yet another reason not to sleep tonight. But they did search that 95-year-old woman who purportedly had a lump in her adult diaper, which I suspect was brown and smelly. I mean, Joe, this blows my mind. This is what now passes for national security, and this is what gives our government opportunities to do mischief if they want to go after somebody. Just about anybody can be indicted these days, it seems.
Well, you would like to think that the government is more committed to doing things like ramping up internal enforcement and the border and, you know, things that make America safer and more secure. But amazingly, they're in the opposite mode. I mean, probably if Obama's policy of that he's trying to implement, or is, I guess, in the process of implementing now, of releasing these 300,000 low-priority illegal aliens. I mean, 10 years ago, the terrorists who were maintaining very low profiles, if they had been rounded up and scheduled for deportation, they would have been released, wouldn't they have?
Well, today, absolutely. But, you know, let me tell you what. One of the terrorists was stopped for speeding. And the police gave him a ticket.
Yeah, the guy in Florida, was it?
Yeah, and they let him go on his merry way. And I'll tell you another horror story, and I made a note of this when I testified before a congressional hearing, Joe. There was a case about 2 or 3 months after 9/11 where intel had been received, and I heard this from my friends who were on the job at the time. I was home with a bum knee. But intelligence was received that there had been 8 Pakistani nationals who had stowed away on the vessel and were possibly coming here to take part in the second wave of terrorist attacks. So I want you folks out there who are listening to think about this. At our bridges and tunnels, we have a special police service that do security at bridges and tunnels appropriate enough. It's called the Triborough Bridge and Tunnel Authority. Triborough because it involves 3 of the 5 boroughs of New York. It's Queens, actually, I don't know why they call it Triborough, because it involves Queens, Brooklyn, Manhattan and the Bronx, but they call it Triborough. Anyway, these cops pulled over a van that had all kinds of things wrong with it. You know, the lights weren't working and the wheels were wobbling. And they said, gee whiz, there's something wrong here. I think the car was stalling on them. So when the cops approached the van, they found eight Pakistani nationals in the van who all offered fake ID. So the cops did what they were supposed to do. They called the FBI. And the FBI said, well, what names do you have? So the cops gave them the names that are on fake ID. Well, if it's fake ID, what's the likelihood that the names on the documents are really the names of the people that are showing you the documents, right? But the FBI, being the FBI, frankly, folks, said, oh, well, those names aren't on our terror watch list, so we don't have any interest in them. Why don't you call immigration? So they called up immigration. And immigration said, well, if you think they're terrorists, why don't you call the FBI? They said, well, we did, and they asked us to call you. So immigration said, well, you know what? If the FBI has no interest in these people, we have no interest in these people. And to the best of my knowledge, these eight guys were permitted to go on their merry way.
Well, just no real...
I mean, what
real,
more can I say?
No diligence at all.
But meanwhile, almost every one of our expectations of privacy and freedom that we thought the Fourth Amendment guaranteed us are gone. If you think the Fourth Amendment applies today, consider what happens when you take an airline flight. And by the way, if you go to the airport today and you start getting searched, and you know what? You get frustrated and you say, you know something? I'm not doing this. You have no right to do this. You try to leave. Do you know you're now subject to arrest?
They can detain you, right?
I'm sorry?
They can detain you.
They can detain you. You could turn around and say, you know, I'm offended. I didn't like the way I was being spoken to. This is America. I'm just, screw this. I'm not going on the trip. I'm going home, and my aunt and uncle will have to come visit me in New York. Now that you started the process, because now you've punked out, now they will detain you, and they will seek to bring charges against you.
Yeah.
This is America, folks. This is America. I was
going to ask you a question before my time runs out here about getting
sure.
back to Smith's bill. Do you think there's a chance that some amendments could be added to that bill so that the states would have the option
well,
of doing
that?
Well,
that was
thing,
the
or?
Discussion that I've had with Mr. Smith's people. It so disturbs me. I can't begin to tell you. This has kept me awake at night. Because he is one of those people in Washington who I have more respect for than you could imagine. I have had the privilege of working with Lamar Smith for 16, 17 years. He's one of my heroes. I'll be honest with you, folks. I don't have too much respect for most politicians. I think in this day and age, I'm not alone. Lamar Smith has always been a gentleman, has always been a leader, has always shown decency and integrity. I'm not sure why this came about this way, and I can't speak for him, and I won't speculate on it. But that was one of the points I raised with his people. And they said, well, maybe it can be amended. And my problem with the maybe it could be amended is what happens if it's not amended? When I buy a new car and I pick my car up at the dealership, if you were to buy a new car and you noticed as you were getting into it that there were bald tires on the car, would you take the car home with the promise that maybe at some point they'll send a mechanic to your house with a set of four new tires? I think you'd say to them, listen, before I take the car home, you better change the tires.
Mm-hmm.
And that was basically what I had to say about the bill. Why are we hoping for an amendment? I know that Lamar Smith believes that E-Verify is so important that he's willing to make a deal on this. And I think E-Verify is incredibly important, and I think he's right about that. But the idea of preempting the states at a time when the federal government has abrogated its entire responsibility?
Mm-hmm.
We are at such risk right now, folks. You have no idea. And I'll be honest with you, and I hope that the next week or two goes very quietly, but the 10th anniversary is a big date for these terrorist bums. We are leaving ourselves vulnerable. And I wrote a commentary for the Washington Times 3 or 4 years ago that Senator Sessions honored me by quoting me on three separate days from the floor of the United States Senate during the floor debate, because I came to call comprehensive immigration reform the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. The idea that you would give official identity documents to illegal aliens for whom no record exists of their entry into our country, and for whom no reliable evidence of their true identities can be found anywhere, which is what makes them undocumented in the parlance of the open borders crowd, people I've come to call the immigration anarchists. So the idea that you would give illegal aliens official identity documents, which incentivizes more illegal immigration, but also creates a national security risk for our country. The idea of providing official identity documents when we don't know what their names are. And you know what's so remarkable is a number of times what I have found is by being out there making my points, I have forced the other side to change their language. You know they get worked up about the word alien, and yet the term alien is not a pejorative. It simply means any person who is not a citizen or national of the United States. And if you want to find out what it's like to be an alien, you don't need a flying saucer. Just go to Canada, go to Mexico, go to England, go to France, go to Germany. Pick a country. Go there. I guarantee you that their law enforcement people will have no problem telling you that you are an alien because you are not a citizen. It is not an insult. There are 6.5 billion human beings on this planet. All but 300 million of those human beings, were they present in the United States, would legally be called aliens. That's just the way international law works. So instead of saying illegal alien, Jimmy Carter started this nonsense about undocumented. So when I raise the issue that undocumented means they can't prove who they are, they now have a new word. I don't know if you've seen it, Joe, but the new word now is unauthorized. Now unauthorized workers. But that's been corrected because now with Obama, everyone's authorized. Except for Americans who can't get a job.
Mike, I'm sure you've seen this one too. I'm sure you've seen potential citizens used out there once in a while.
Well, I did that. And what I called them was pre-citizens. I was so damn angry when Jimmy Carter said that they would take disciplinary action against any employee of the INS who dared use the term illegal alien, that we had to call them undocumented. First it was undocumented aliens, and then they said, no, they're undocumented workers. And I got so angry, I said, well, I'm going to call them pre-citizens. And that really caught on. One day I got a call from a Border Patrol agent. I believe he was in Yuma, Arizona. This is back in the late 70s. And he called up with that distinctive Midwestern or Southwestern accent. And he said, I'm looking for a file on one of them pre-citizens. And I almost fell out of my chair laughing my tail off because I said, yep, now I've done it. It's traveled clear across the country, pre-citizens. It's astonishing. It's astonishing. And as Tom Garcia is a great American. He's a military guy. He has served this country so well. And he's Hispanic. And I get crazy. I mean, doesn't it bother you when people presume that if your name is Gazzardi, you're Italian-American, and so you probably vote a certain way, you probably think a certain way?
Oh, of course it does, yeah.
And I get crazy. The Jewish vote. What the devil is the Jewish vote? Mm-hmm. You know, this is a form of prejudice, and we need to fight back, folks. All Jews are not the same. When you start to say all Jews are the same, all blacks are the same, all Hispanics are the same, all Italians are the same, that's bigotry. You know, it's like that question, oh, you know how those Jews are, and someone winks at you. Well, believe me, that's not complimentary. And they do it with every ethnicity in America. America, the melting pot, and what we have are politicians who are dividing us up. They go to the Latino community and they say, well, anybody who wants secure borders hates Latinos. The most likely victims of the Mexican cartels, the most likely victims of MS-13, believe it or not, are the members of the Latino community, just as the most likely victims of Russian mob are the immigrants living in the Russian community. The most likely victims of violence perpetrated by the Jamaican drug posses are the members of the Caribbean communities. Asian organized crime most often does harm to Asian Americans and Asian immigrants in the United States. It is not a statement of being anti-immigrant to say I want to keep criminals out of our country. It has gotten so insane that there's a program called Secure Communities, and the governor of the state of New York and the governor of New Hampshire turns around and says, oh, we don't want that because we may wind up turning illegal aliens over to immigration who have no serious criminal histories. Well, wait a moment. You mean the immigration laws in and of themselves are not serious enough? Did you catch the false arguments that Napolitano came up with about whether or not it's a felony to run the border? Do you remember that big debate whether it's a crime to be an illegal alien?
Well, she's had so many false and misleading statements.
Oh.
You know, one runs right into another.
Well, and what's remarkable, and this is what you folks out there who maybe aren't familiar with what I've had to say, and again, I urge you to go to my website, michaelcutler.net, or the CAPS website, capsweb.org. Look at the immigration laws. Look at the categories of aliens who by law are deemed to be excludable. It includes aliens with dangerous communicable diseases, aliens who have mental illness and are either prone to extreme violence or are sexual deviants, pedophiles, rapists, that sort of thing, convicted felons, fugitives from justice, human traffickers, drug smugglers, members of violent gangs, money launderers, pimps, prostitutes, war criminals, human rights violators, spies, terrorists. These are all people that are on the list of categories of aliens who are supposed to be kept out of the United States. So when someone runs the border, we know that they did it because they belong to one or more categories of aliens who by law are not supposed to be admitted into the United States. And I assure you that among them are the criminals and the fugitives and the terrorists. So it's not whether or not it's a felony to run the border. And by the way, if you've been deported, it is. And if you have a conviction for felonies, it's a 20-year felony. I worked with Senator D'Amato back in the 80s to get that bill enacted. But it's that it's a threat to national security and community safety to have illegal aliens present in our country when there's no record of their entry and there's no way of determining who they are. This is just common sense. But today, when you talk to politicians, most of them make no common sense. They are counting on the ignorance and the passivity of the American citizen. And that has to end, folks. If we're going to turn this around, if we haven't already reached the tipping point, the point of no return, then it's going to depend on everybody who listens to this program spreading the word and having the conversations with their friends and their family members and their neighbors and their coworkers, and have those conversations. When I was a kid, my parents said, you know, it's not polite to talk about politics or religion. Well, religion, I agree. Whatever your relationship may or may not be with God, that's as private and personal as it gets. Whether you believe, whether you don't believe, what religion you subscribe to, I don't care, and nobody else should care either. But where politics is concerned, it's the lack of interest, the lack of involvement by the American people that, quite frankly, folks, has gotten us into the mess that we are in. The solution to this crisis is involvement by citizen activists who are willing to go out there, have those discussions with their neighbors, confront the politicians when they hold their town hall meetings, and get their voices heard. When I was a B'nai B'rith president back in college, there was a wonderful film that we all saw when I went to a conference in upstate New York, and I remember it like yesterday. It was one of those seminal moments. The name of the film was The Price of Silence, and it talked about how if you're sitting around at a dinner party or some event or whatever, and somebody uses the language of bigotry, and you don't stand up and disagree with them, then everyone there is going to believe that nobody disagrees with those hateful words. Maybe I've spent too many years in law enforcement. I tend to sometimes suffer potty mouth, to be honest. My kids have heard some words that maybe they shouldn't have when I get angry enough. But the N-word or any version thereof never comes out of my mouth, because I really don't think that body parts or bodily functions are curse words. I do think that words of hatred are hate words. So, you know, but the lesson was very clear from that film, that if you don't speak out against something that you hear that offends you, then nobody will know that it offends you, and everybody will presume that you're in agreement. When you hear the nonsense that's being spewed by the politicians, they need to hear from we, the people. We need to be very clear about this with these politicians. I hope I make sense to you, Joe.
I'm sorry, I missed that last part. I know the politicians are, you know, our biggest enemy in Washington, D.C.,
yep.
And even on the state level, local level, and I agree, Mike, that the important message that everybody get out of this radio program is that they have to get involved.
Yep.
There's just not enough people who are getting the message from them to the politicians, to the country.
That's right.
Leader.
You know, I spoke before some civilian employees of the Air Force this past weekend in Washington. I'm heading to Dayton, Ohio, to do another event before our military. And I always like to ask people, have you ever gone to a restaurant and said to some waiter or waitress, just throw some crap on the plate, I'll eat whatever it is? Have you ever bought a new car and said to the car salesman, I don't care, two doors, four doors, stick, automatic, sunroof, no sun, just put a car in my driveway? You know, we are generally very specific about the food we eat, the things that we buy. We need to be no less specific in dealing with our elected representatives. And we need to educate ourselves so we could see through the fluff and the nonsense that they spew. When they created this virtual fence, boy, they gave it such a great name. Didn't you love the name? Secure Border Initiative Network, SBINet. You know, I made the comment at that event in Washington a couple of days ago. I said, you know, it sounded as though they dug up General Patton, breathed life into the poor old general, put him back in his uniform, handed him an American flag, and said, George, head for the border. SBINet, the virtual fence, squandered over $1 billion in taxpayer dollars, more importantly, squandered a decade of time that was wasted, and the borders are no more secure because of it. And meanwhile, how many bad guys crossed that border while we played games with SBINet initiative? We have got to educate ourselves to see through the propaganda, to see through the lies, the misinformation, the false information, so that we can confront these politicians. We need to make certain that they understand that we are not as stupid as they hope we are. And the best way to do it, folks, is to go to different sources of information. Don't just take Mike Cutler's word for it or Joe Ghisardi's word for it. I do think we have racked up many years in the trenches fighting these battles. I've been at it for 40 years. I know, Joe, you've been at it for 15, 20 years.
25, Mike.
25 years. Sorry about that. So, you know, we have a long history of doing it. But I'm not asking you to blindly believe what I'm telling you. All I ask is that I hope that the information that I provide every week on this program gets you to think, gets you to question, gets you to challenge what you're being told and what's really happening. The stakes could not be any higher. Immigration is not a single issue, folks. It is a major factor in every threat that our nation faces today. We can't win a war on terror with millions of people in our country whose identities, backgrounds, intentions, and affiliations are unknown and unknowable. We can't win a war on drugs or terror when contraband, potentially weapons, narcotics, and the like, easily flow across our borders. We can't dig out of the economic hole we are in until and unless we get Americans back to work. And adding more aliens to the list of those people authorized to work under E-Verify, the program that Mr. Smith's bill would make mandatory, these folks would have lawful authorization to work now that this administration has engaged on this insane policy of giving work authorization to hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens. This is like playing a game of musical chairs we all played when we were kids, and suddenly the doors pop open and lots more kids come into the room, but they don't add any more chairs. And if you don't get one of those chairs, folks, you may lose your house. You will lose your ability to support your children and your families and yourself. The stakes could not be higher. We are talking about homelessness in America. ABC News did a story last week. It was on their website, and I wrote a commentary. Please go to my website, michaelcutler.net. And what did it say? It said that one in four American kids is now food insecure. They define food insecure as a person who wakes up in the morning with no surety that he or she will get three square meals that day. One in six American adults is now food insecure. So this level of poverty in America today is breathtaking. And they tell us that the recession is over. Look, if you believe the recession is over, then all I could say is that we must be in the middle of a depression. Many Americans are losing their homes by dumping houses on the market. Supply and demand kicks in. It lowers the value of everyone's home. And when you have abandoned homes in your community, that further degrades the value of your house because nobody wants to live in a community where there's abandoned homes in which potentially drug dealers and prostitutes have set up shop on top of everything else, so it's a matter of safety concerns. It's all rippling through our economy. This is not about scapegoating immigrants, but it's about making clear distinctions between people who are entitled to be here and people who are not. And again, as I started out the program by saying it, the difference between an immigrant and an illegal alien is comparable to the difference between a house guest and a burglar. If ever there was a time that the immigration laws should be enforced, this is the time. It's about economics. It's about our school system. It's about education. It's about health care. It's about national security. It's about the war on drugs and the war on the Mexican cartels. And incredibly, with all this going on, our borders have never been more wide open, and there have never been more opportunities for illegal aliens to create for themselves lawful status under false names. It takes my breath away to think that this is something that our own government is doing to us. The government that was sworn in to uphold the Constitution, to protect our nation, and protect our citizens is going 180 degrees in the opposite direction from what sanity and common sense should dictate.
Mike, thank you for having me on the show. I'm going to sign off here.
Okay, Joe,
thank you for joining me,
and I thank you for your hard work at CAPS.
And the same back to you. I know that just to reinforce to your listeners, our listeners, that your website, michaelcutler.net, is really
right.
A treasure trove of valuable, extremely valuable information about what's going on around us. And the CAPS website also has a variety of good posts about various aspects of the immigration crisis. So thank you very much, Mike.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you for joining us today, and I wish you and your family a very happy Labor Day weekend.
And the same to you.
Thank you.
Talk to you again soon.
Be well. Thanks for joining us. Folks, that was Joe Gazzardi, Senior Writing Fellow with CAPS, Californians for Population Stabilization. I thank all of you for joining me this Friday afternoon. It's a beautiful sunny day in New York today. It's a nice contrast from the hurricane that slammed us just about a week ago. I hope all of you have a wonderful, enjoyable, safe Labor Day weekend as we start to head in towards the last days of summer throughout the United States. And I hope you'll be joining me again next week. I hope to bring you more guests, more interesting conversation. Next week, we're going to be focusing, as you might expect, on 9/11, on whether or not our government really is looking out for our best interests, protecting us, protecting our families, protecting our nation. Folks, I always like to end commentaries by reminding you that democracy is not a spectator sport. I urge you, please get involved. Please make your voice heard. Every storm starts with that first raindrop. We all need to be good, loyal little raindrops and start that flood of Americans making their voices heard by those who are elected to represent us. Thank you again for joining me. See you all next week. So long, everybody. Until next week, this is Mike Cutler signing off.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.